Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Beautiful day in the central Susquehanna Valley. Glad you're with us for the afternoon. It is the best of the Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve's back from vacation Monday. Sean Carey, we're in the Sunbury Motor Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. You can get in touch with us with an email, Steve Jones, one word, Steve Jones at WKOK.com. You can also find us on social media, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at Steve Jones PSU. And you are definitely invited to subscribe to our Steve Jones Show podcast. It is available on both the Apple Podcast app, iTunes, Google Play. Just search Steve Jones Show. And when you subscribe, you'll get the shows dropped right to your smartphone and tablets. You can listen to them anytime, anywhere. And we also have 3 months of shows always archived. Podcast archive page at stevejonesshow.com. So we got some great replays for you today. And it was a little over a year ago when we started posting the Steve Jones Show as a podcast on iTunes and Google Play. And without a doubt, the most downloaded podcast was last August when the first time we had Spider Caldwell on the show. Spider, of course, for decades, Penn State football equipment guy, loads and loads of stories, tales from on the road and so much more. So what we're going to do, the whole 4 o'clock hour today, we'll replay our first interview with Spider Caldwell. Spider was also on the show last year in late September, leading up to the Indiana game at Beaver Stadium when Penn State had the throwback uniforms on that day. Well, Spider played a very important part as to how the jersey looked, the whole uniform looked. So we'll get into that in that portion of our Spider Caldwell audio tomorrow here on the Best Of. Also tomorrow, we're going to go back to the Penn State Blue-White game. Steve and Jack had a chance to talk with Keegan-Michael Key, who is the a former homecoming king, an honorary homecoming celebrity. Also a former honorary coach now. Add that to the resume. Right alongside James Franklin. Blue-White game, Keegan-Michael Key was on the sidelines, and Steve and Jack had a chance to speak with him, so we'll replay that interview tomorrow, as well as Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl champion Steph Wisniewski and Michael Robinson, former Nittany Lions quarterback and football analyst on NFL Network. So we'll catch all those interviews and also another Spider Caldwell replay tomorrow as we move through our Best Of week here on WKOK. How about the baseball game last night? A lot of fun. Record 10 home runs. American League outlasted the National League in 10 innings, 8-6. Alex Bregman was named All-Star MVP after hitting the go-ahead homer in the 10th inning. Tampa Bay catcher Wilson Ramos, I think he received the largest ovation among players not wearing a Washington Nationals jersey. Max Scherzer threw, well, his four fastest pitches of the season last night. 98.5, 98.2, 98 flat, 97.9, and 97.3. Actually, the 97.3 was the fifth fastest pitch so far this season by Scherzer, and that was back in late May against the Baltimore Orioles. Well, the first run last night went to Aaron Judge. That was one of those 95-mile-an-hour Max Scherzer fastballs. And the funny part of it all, Yankees teammate Luis Severino, he caught the home run ball between warm-up pitches in the bullpen. Another all-star game, another hit for Mike Trout. He hit a solo home run last night against Mets right-hander Jacob DeGrom. I think Trout was he was in the role of comic relief last night. channeled his inner Al Roker, as Joe Buck said. American League took an early 2-0 lead thanks to those Judge and Trout home runs. And then the National League was able to rally and get a tie thanks to other home runs from Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras and Colorado Rockies shortstop Trevor Story. Down two outs, and down two in the ninth inning, with two outs in the ninth inning, down two runs, Scooter Gannett to the rescue. Reds second baseman swatted a game-tying two-run homer against Mariners closer Edwin Diaz to not that All-Star game tied up at 5-5 going into extra innings, and it was Astro hitters taking Dodgers pitchers deep in extra innings. It sounds a lot like the World Series, doesn't it? Well, it was Bregman and George Springer hitting back-to-back solo home runs in the top of the 10th, gave the American League a 7-5 lead, and they were able to hold on the league, hold on to the league lead, and take the win by a score of 8-6. For the All-Star game, so far, perfectly encapsulated baseball for this year. Lots of homers, lots of strikeouts, lots of walks. So there were a total of 90 plate appearances last night, 10 home runs. So that's that equals 11.1% of total plate appearances last night, home runs. 25 strikeouts, 9 walks. 48% of the plate appearances in the All-Star game ended in a walk, a strikeout, or a homer. The highest three true outcome rate in All-Star game history. Lots of dingers, lots of whiffs, but it was fun to watch. And yes, Major League Baseball was in the spotlight for all the good reasons last night for a change. I'll tell you what was really good. Back in May, when we spent time on an awesome Wednesday afternoon, just like today, at the Sunburys, at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club, and it was the Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA's in Sunbury and Milton, the benefactor that day for the 27th Annual Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. We had so much fun there that day. Guys had a blast on the course in the morning with the Chief Dave Ritchie and Craig Fogle, the suit, and of course Steve having a great time on the links. Ended up with 4 under par that day. And then, of course, then we set up shop right at the top of the hill outside on the patio for our live broadcast that day. And we had a chance to dive into a great topic. And our wonderful friend of the show, Bob Buhner, also stopped by. And we kicked around the topic, heroes.
I listened to something on the way in today. And I was listening to Golf Channel on Sirius. And it was Mark Adams. And he played back a piece that aired on Golf Channel last night on Golf Central. And it was a piece about what Tiger Woods means and what would it mean to the sport of golf and the tour once his skills really diminish and he essentially retires and is off the tour. And there were some bleak commentary in there at times. And it's interesting, but it is interesting that Tiger Woods, and this goes beyond just the sport of golf. I know we're here at a golf course, but this is a commentary that goes beyond the sport of golf. We have people that love their teams. We have a lot of Phillies fans here, obviously. We carry the Phillies in WKOK. If we're going to talk about the Phillies, we can talk easily about Nick Williams and Scott Kingery and Reese Hoskins and Jake Arrieta, and the fans here know right away what we're talking about. There's also a very good chance that if we bring up somebody, another team, they might only know a little bit about them. But when it comes to their team, they know a lot. There are very few figures, and part of this is ESPN, because ESPN has taken certain individuals and they have vaulted them into their own category. Essentially, as a professional, what has Tim Tebow done? I mean, great college player, Heisman Trophy winner. He's playing Double-A baseball right now. He had an okay season with the Broncos. He won the playoff game against Pittsburgh. But a lot of that was based on defense, the rushing game, and so forth. And he hung in there most of the time. All right? That's just being fair. All right? Against Pittsburgh, though, I thought he played well, and he was a big reason why they won the game in the playoff game. But that was a game. Tebow, LeBron James. The NBA's been interesting. They've been able to take the baton from Bird and Magic, which helped resurrect the NBA, which was really in trouble at the time. They turned it into more of a team game. So then the next part where there was a little bit of a gap and then Jordan took over. After Jordan, yeah, you had Shaq and Kobe, but really was it really... They're really, really good, but did they transcend the game? Now, Kobe thinks he did, but in reality, he didn't. Shaq in some ways did in pop culture, but then LeBron James came along. I'll give you an example. James Harden is a really, really good player. But he doesn't transcend the game. As good, in fact, there's a very good chance when they hand out the MVP this year, James Harden will be the MVP. But he doesn't transcend the game. He may be in a couple of State Farm commercials with Chris Paul, which is great, and Ariza, that's fine. But it doesn't transcend the game. Steph Curry's close. He's getting there. I'll tell you, with young kids, they love him. Because, again, he shoots the three ball. And I'll tell you, when he walked into the Penn State Pitt game in Brooklyn, because he was there the night before playing, then he did the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. Well, he came over to the Penn State Pitt game and watched the second half of the game. Well, it was a big deal to everybody that he was around. So maybe there's that.
Well, New Orleans was up 7-8 points last night, late first, early second, when Curry finally got on the floor last night. Thunderous ovation. You'd have thought Golden State was leading at that point.
Right. But, again, that's Golden State's crowd.
Yes.
Right? So they're going to be like that. Who transcends the game in baseball? Nobody. Now, Mike Trout is a great player. But there's Bonnie. Bonnie's
Bonnie
waving.
Down the first tee.
Bonnie's like,
hit him long and straight.
17 under par. 17 under par?
Whoa. Yeah,
we're 22. That was because of an eagle on 18. But Trout plays late night games. You don't really get to see him. You hear about him. You see some highlights. Harper, to a point, does he transcend the game? The Cubs, when they won a couple years ago, got great ratings.
He's Bryce Harper's now leading off.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't even thought about that. But we'll get to that in a couple of days about where guys are hitting based on analytics. But baseball doesn't have anybody that transcends the game. You know, the guy that has a chance to is Ohtani. All right, from Japan, pitches, hits. He's doing something that really nobody has done since the days of Babe Ruth. Where, baseball doesn't have Babe Ruths today. You know? Now, baseball, when Babe Ruth played, was the only show in town. There was no NHL, no NBA, right? The NFL, I mean, Babe Ruth came up in the teens. The NFL didn't start till 1920. Right? And then it was in small towns. It wasn't until when Ruth was later in his career. But the Yankees won the World Series in 32. So the Giants got into the first two championship games in 33 and 34 against the Bears. Right? Then football started on a path but didn't really get popular until the 50s. We don't have transcendent figures in baseball. Football is so well established, I think people know about other teams. You may be an Eagles fan, but you know all about how the Giants drafted. You know who Eli Manning is. You know who OBJ is. You know who Saquon Barkley is. Right? Football is one sport where I think fans of one team know a lot about the other teams that they play. We're heading into an interesting time. Tiger Woods, this is a time there's great depth in the sport of golf. And that's what this piece was about. Justin Thomas is a heck of a player. Jordan Spieth is a heck of a player. You know, Rory McIlroy has times where he can be. But there's been nobody that's picked up that mantle when Tiger's in the field, even at the age of 42. They claim that the golf tournament makes an extra $8 to $10 million just by his pure presence. if he's in contention, the ratings go up literally better than 100% from the year before if he's in contention. When he played, I think it was the Honda Classic because he finished second at the Valspar, right? Honda Classic, 12-point type. Tiger impresses. This is Monday. Tiger impresses, right? He finished 12th. Justin Thomas made three incredible shots to win the tournament. Right? And Tiger impressed. He finished 12th. And to be honest with you, everyone's talking about the Masters was a step forward for him. But he wasn't a contender at the Masters.
Well, look, what Jim, yeah, they were on those little 15-minute Masters right. highlights on late night, Thursday night and Friday night. I mean, that was how Jim Nance led it off. He goes, this is the most highly anticipated Masters in a decade.
Right. Well, Tiger had contended in two tournaments. Mickelson had won. Right? So Mickelson had won a tournament. He was the second biggest name in golf. And Justin Thomas had won. Spieth had been playing well, so you had some big names, but he carries the day. I'm wondering if we've put so much on certain individuals that in order to try and attract as many casual fans as possible that Tiger's going to retire at some point, maybe 5 years, who knows. LeBron James is going to be gone. LeBron James is not young anymore, as great as he's played. I think there's another part, too, that and hockey doesn't have a transcendent figure. There's no Gretzky. There's no Bobby Orr. There's no Mario Lemieux. Crosby's really, really good. Ovechkin's really, really good. But they don't transcend. John McEnroe transcended. Hey, Roger Federer doesn't. Okay? It's not that Roger Federer isn't possibly the greatest tennis player of all time. You can make an argument that he is. But that doesn't mean you transcend the sport. John McEnroe, in terms of number of major championships and so forth, transcended the sport just because he was a personality that could also play great tennis. Great tennis. But you don't. We're losing more and more of those transcendent figures because there is nobody that's going to replace LeBron James as a transcendent figure. And let's be honest about it. Let's take LeBron James and Tiger Woods both. They both get exponentially more criticism than they deserve whenever they fail. They also get exponentially more praise when they succeed than they deserve. There's got to be more of a medium. Oh, LeBron. Look, LeBron does some great things. It's not the first time I've ever seen it. Okay? It's not the first time.
Yeah, but this year, I mean, there's really no other. Not much else on that team that's really backing him up.
Well, I understand that, but like, look at Toronto. DeRozan's a good player. Lowry's a good player, but they don't transcend the game. They don't. And I wonder if we're getting to a point in sports where we're running out of transcendent, because they tried to make Rory McIlroy the next Tiger Woods, the next transcendent figure. Didn't work.
You know, it may be, Steve, that we're running out of heroes, in a sense. You know, when we were growing up in the 50s and 60s as kids, young kids, we had heroes we looked up in sports figures. They were our heroes. And now, you know, you look at it and say, who would, if I was a kid today, who would be my sports hero? Because I'm a Penguins fan, it might be Sidney Crosby, but that's about it. I can't think of any real heroes the way we looked at them in our generations.
You have to have must-see individuals. I'll give you an example who a must-see individual was in the history of our lifetime. Right? Whether you liked him or not, Muhammad Ali. Now, Ali actually had a lot of fights on free TV. A lot of fights were on free TV. Okay, whether you liked him and wanted him to win, or you didn't like him, you had to watch Muhammad Ali. My brother and I watched. Anytime Ali was on, we watched. And it didn't matter if we liked him or not. That's irrelevant. Okay? And in the process, he made people around him stars. Foreman, Frazier, Kenny Norton.
Cosell.
Howard would dispute that.
But still, it was appointment
Kerry,
watch on
Kerry,
TV.
I transcend sports.
But it was leading up to every fight. It was appointment TV to watch. Well, what are those two going to talk about next?
You should hear Johnny Holliday and the Howard Cosell stories. Because remember, Johnny did Speaking of Sports, okay, which was right after Cosell. So Johnny be online listening to Howard.
Angel, I can't hear.
Johnny, you know darn well Johnny can make me roll and laugh harder than anybody on the planet.
Well, the three of you, you and Holliday and the law firm of Jones, Girardi and Holliday, held court there a couple months
ago. We had a night at the Nittany Lion Inn down at Whiskers. We just couldn't stop laughing for 2.5 hours, and one story after another. You guys have heard of Johnny and all the great stuff he's done with nationally, the Olympics, Maryland football and basketball. He's an even better guy than he is an announcer. As he always tells people, he says, "All right," he says, "good thing Steve lives in State College and I live down here near D.C. He says, because if we live 45 minutes apart, our wives would be like, what are you doing? Are you going out to dinner again? Come on. All right. Hey, we'll take a break. Beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club. It's going to be a great day when it's all said and done, not just weather-wise and not just in terms of the fun quotient on the golf course, but for the greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. It looks like we're going to raise between $20,000 and $30,000. For one of the really great charities in our area. 27th Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, 7th year that we've been here as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And as Steve enjoys vacation this week, we get to enjoy more best of with you. Sean here, Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And it's always great when our wonderful friend Kim Jones from NFL Network joins us.
Let's start with the Giants and Saquon Barkley. Obviously these are OTAs, so it's a little bit different, but how does the fit seem so far?
Perfect. Next question. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm not kidding about the perfect part, though. He is what they thought. He's everything they thought. They love him. Don't believe anything you hear about him not being an easy pick for them. He was. Or him not being absolutely number one on their board. He was. There's only been one OTA open to the media. Not all of them are open for any team. So I was there on Monday when they were open. Saquon talked. He continues to impress my colleagues in the media who aren't as fortunate and don't know him yet, and nothing he says is surprising to me, but it's all impressive. He handles things very well, maturely, as you would imagine. Talks about blitz pickup. Christian Hackenberg actually told me a funny story this week about how he didn't pick up a blitz against Illinois one time, and he let him have it. But that when Saquon got to campus, he realized, physically he was able to do everything. And he said to him, if you work on pass protection, that will set you apart. And next time I talk to Saquon, I will just you know, reminisce about that with him because I thought that was interesting from Hackenberg this week because it is going to set him apart among what is expected of rookie running backs. And he'll be a big part of the passing game. He'll be a big part of everything they do. And so far the fit has been what I expected, which is just really perfect.
And you and I know that in this league, usually rookie running backs come in and they find a spot. Being an every down, three down running back is a little bit unusual for somebody coming in the league, and that's where the blocking part comes in.
The blocking part, and also, most importantly, because you can get your quarterback, you know, killed. But also the pass catching, which it's funny that he is so advanced in that area. I mean, he's advanced, period, but he's advanced in that area. And when I did the piece I did for NFL.com on him, and which ran in October, I remember Deshaun Hamilton telling me that Saquon had asked him to help to show him how to run out of the slot. And of course, Deshaun Hamilton being Deshaun did, of course. But, you know, and sure enough, we saw Saquon and OTAs lined up two places, Steve, that I noticed from a distance because we were a bit of a distance away. In the backfield, of course, and in the slot. So it's going to be fascinating to see what the Giants can do with him, especially with the talent around him on that offense.
Obviously, he's just at the beginning part of this, but what can the domino effect, say Saquon has success that we think he's going to have and continues to deliver the personality that you and I have been witness to now for years.
Yep.
What does that then do for a team thinking about a Penn State player because of a guy like him?
Well, I think it opens minds. I mean, I think that Gesicki can have the same effect. You know, listen, maybe not to the level. I mean, I think Odell's right. Saquon will have the, you know, top-selling jersey, certainly among rookies, and he'll probably be in the top 10 overall in the league and maybe at one point have the top-selling jersey. I mean, Saquon's going to be a phenomenon. We know that. But, you know, Hamilton with the Broncos, Gesicki in Miami, and Saquon. I mean, I think that they can kind of show it. It is, to some degree, a different athlete and a different caliber player vis-a-vis the NFL that we're seeing at Penn State now. And I do think, you know, listen, the New York Giants were not interested in Penn State players for a long time, and I know that for a fact, and they rarely had them. Sometimes they got them in free agency. Maybe they spent a fifth-round pick on one, that kind of thing, but they were not looking for him. Now, Saquon makes all of that an easy decision, obviously, plus there's a new regime with the Giants. But I think you make a good point. I do think that there will be a reason to maybe look again and sort of reevaluate what you think of the Penn State player coming out into the NFL.
All right. Overall, what was the general impression everybody had of Giant OTAs? Because obviously Odell Beckham was there.
Yep.
You know, obviously Eli was there. So what was the general impression?
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think they're optimistic. You know, you have to remember, and I do radio here in the New York area on WFAN. You know, I said, someone asked me last week what I thought, and I said, 7 wins. And they were, you know, there was a Giants fan who was very disappointed by that. And I said, I mean, God knows, Steve. First of all, I'm never right about this stuff, ever. I'm never right about this stuff. But, I mean, they're going from 3 wins. They added a lot. They have a new offense, a new defense, and I just figure there's going to be growing pains. And the first 8 games of the season, somehow, the Giants and 49ers are tied for the toughest schedules in the league. So it all, you know, I'm not sure that this, you know, has the makings of a 13-3 season. I just think that they're going to show progress, and I think there's optimism about that. And, you know, one thing I know for sure, Saquon's biggest fan on the Giants that I've identified so far is Odell Beckham Jr. And their lockers are 2 lockers apart. I can't speak for Saquon. I know that Odell was hoping they'd be next to each other. I think I'm not sure who the player is in the middle because we're not allowed in the locker room until the regular season starts, but something tells me they'll all adapt just fine, and it might be Sterling Shepard, for example, or a receiver or a different running back, but they'll all be fine with that. But I think that Odell recognizes the weight he has carried when healthy for this Giants team, and it really hasn't worked out. And now to get someone to come in and really open up the field, they're going to open up the field for each other in different ways, I think is something that any player, and I know Beckham, is excited about.
What kind of read do you have on the Jets side of it?
Yeah, you know, the Jets are going to be interesting. They're going to have to be patient with Sam Darnold. They will be patient with Sam Darnold. One thing I asked Todd Bowles the other day in his press conference, Steve, after they traded Hackenberg was, is there a lesson to be learned here because you wasted, this is how I phrase it, because you wasted a second round pick and now you have to develop a young quarterback? And, you know, I was sort of disappointed, not that I don't actually, you know, he can certainly answer however he wants, but Bowles said there's no lesson because every player is different. But the fact of the matter is for the Jets, this is a recurring theme of a complete inability to find, develop, and then have success with a franchise quarterback. You right. can just recent history. Mark Sanchez, Geno Smith, Christian, all first or second round picks. I know a first and second round pick is a difference. I understand that. But none of whom made it at the big picture level. Sanchez had the most success, obviously, Geno less so, and then Christian never took a snap. But this is an organization that has to find a way to do something it has not in recent history been able to do, or anything you talk about the Jets is for not. If Sam Darnold isn't eventually, not immediately, but eventually a successful franchise quarterback for them, it's a disaster. And I'm not sure how many people in the organization would survive that. Now, that we won't know that this season, but I would certainly think we would know it fairly shortly after that.
Well, it's interesting about that is that I remember when I did Mark Sanchez's last game. It was the Rose Bowl, and last college game.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
the Rose Bowl against
yep.
Penn State.
Yep.
And he was phenomenal in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went out, and I remember how upset Pete Carroll was
yeah.
that he elected to go out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that Christian, of course, went out early.
Mm-hmm.
Geno Smith, I'm not sure if he may have been a senior when he went out. But, I mean, if he went out early, too, I mean, this is a trend now of quarterbacks coming out early and they're expected to learn on the job. How difficult is that even for somebody that's a little bit more mature to do?
Well, it's hard, especially given that the NFL Players Union, you know, in the CBA, insisted on less instruction time with coaches in the off season. I've never understood that. You know, I understand when coaches abuse it, it has to be dealt with. I get that part of it. But to just take it away entirely, coaches will tell you, even some young players will tell you, they would like that chance to learn in the off season when they're not on the quote-unquote clock of a season. And then they're ready for the season and can actually compete to start or, in some cases, make the 53-man roster. So it is short-sighted. It is not easy. And in the Jets' situation, they are entrusting Jeremy Bates, who not so long ago was spending a few years out of football entirely. He is both the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach. And people will say to me, yeah, but Josh McCown's really the quarterback's coach. Well, first of all, no, he's not. He's your starting quarterback. But Josh McCown is a good mentor and was one to Christian. But mm-hmm. they are entrusting Bates, really, if you think about it, and I have suggested it is this way, with the entire operation. Because if the offense mm-hmm. and Darnold fail, the entire operation fails. There's no way around right. that with the Jets.
Wow. That's exactly right. They are entrusting the whole thing to him.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's all on his plate. It's amazing.
Right,
it's amazing. It's all on his plate.
What do they think of Sam Darnold? I mean, they obviously thought high enough of him to
yeah.
pick him third overall, but now what do they think now they got him?
They love him. My buddy Albert Breer in MMQB and another buddy, Brian Costello in the New York Post, both wrote fairly similar stories. MMQB obviously is a longer form about, you know, the sort of the inside the organization take, mostly anonymously, but they were all inside the Jets organization people talking about how they fell in love with him. They just didn't think that there was any way they could get him. Darnold apparently told Jets people he thought the Giants were taking him number two. We know that was never going to happen, but I can't blame the kid for visiting with a team and thinking that team likes him. There's nothing wrong with that. The Jets never called the Giants to trade up to two. They were willing to gamble there. That part of the gamble certainly paid off because Barkley was the pick there the whole time. But they love Darnold. They think that he can develop. He's 20 years old. I do think he turns 21 relatively soon, but I'd have to check. But he's 20 years old. We've seen the fumbled snaps at practice and at OTAs, or the OTA that was open. We've seen fumbled snaps. He completed 2 of 10 passes the other day in team drills. And, you know, we've seen interception, I believe, every time we've seen him. But that is to be expected. And I once watched Eli Manning in his rookie minicamp hit a tackling dummy with the ball. So I do understand that there is growth that these guys can have at this point in their careers.
But the tackling dummy was open.
He really was. He was blue, and he was in the middle of the field wide open.
And right on the money with
him. Yes.
I have to ask you about, you and I love to talk football.
Yep.
And we love to talk about the players, who's doing mm-hmm. well, who's doing not. How tough has it been for you at times to just stick to, hey, let's talk about football, when there's so many ancillary issues like the one that came up this week?
Yeah, the anthem issue obviously is overriding, so emotional. I actually have a radio show tomorrow. It's only a 3-hour show, and I don't know how much anthem will do. The callers will kind of decide that for me in some cases. But on my Twitter, I stick to football, some goofiness, some baseball, that kind of thing. I don't treat my Twitter as sort of a pulpit or a soapbox, and I'm not being critical of those who do. I'm just saying I don't. I choose not to. Partly the brushback you get from even the most seemingly innocuous comment, I do not need to wade into the political feelings of our country at the moment and take it, you know, from either side or both sides with literally anything I would say. So I don't do that. The anthem issue, though, the only thing I wonder is if there's not some regret, and I'm not saying there is, I'm wondering, from ownership level and NFL level, that they kind of stirred a pot that, you know, was already on simmer, headed to cool down.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just kind of resurrected this week, and now it's sort of a, oh, here we go again. When, by the end of the season, Steve, fewer than 10 players were kneeling. Yeah. And I'm not so sure all of those, I don't know, I truly don't know, but I'm not sure all of those would have knelt, you know, September 8th or whatever the heck date the season opens this year. So the timing, I understand they have their meetings, the NFL owners have their meetings March, May, and then in October, and I understand they wanted to kind of get ahead of this, but in getting ahead of it, they really rekindled something that had kind of left our consciousness for a while.
You know, it's interesting. You said exactly what I said on the show yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, I said it's the same thing, that an issue that, especially after they had made the $100 million commitment,
yes,
that
mm-hmm.
it just
which is significant.
Significant and showed great leadership.
Yep.
All the way around, by the commissioner, by the players.
Yep.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to put everything like, okay, we're on track here. And then they threw it back on track by doing this when I didn't think they needed to.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And you hear, you know, from credible journalists, hey, you know, there's the midterm elections. They were afraid it might be brought up again politically. Well, you know what? If it were, and after a month of season or during a month of the first month of the season, excuse me, when, you know, four players were kneeling or six players were kneeling, then you're really sort of reaching there, you know, no matter who you are politically bringing it up again. And I just thought this was one the NFL could have won by being passive. And I don't often feel that way about issues. A lot of times I do feel it. Whoever you are, you need to confront it. You need to take it on. This one, I thought they had won and certainly were continuing to win by sort of sitting back and letting it go. They obviously felt the need to be proactive.
Well, you and I'd rather talk football. So,
anytime. You want to talk about Christian?
Yeah, I want to ask you about, he's going to go out, obviously, to Oakland, where it's Connor Cook, E.J. Manuel, and Christian, because obviously we know Derek Carr's not going anywhere.
Right, right.
What'd you think of it?
Well, I know for a fact that head coaches in the NFL, some of whom may have particular interest in Penn State, thought that getting him to Gruden was his best-case scenario. If you're wondering, I do think Houston, I think Houston would have claimed Christian on waivers. A lot of teams obviously weren't looking to give up anything, even a conditional seventh-round pick, to trade for a player who didn't take a snap in his first 2 years, and the Texans would also fall into that category. But on waivers, it would have been interesting. He would have obviously had to go through the pecking order. Houston would have been interested. I do think some other teams would have been interested. He wasn't going to go unclaimed, let's put it that way, and then he would have been a free agent able to choose. That was not going to happen this time around. But I think the idea, getting him to Gruden, who, from what I am told, is John Gruden is incredibly excited to work with Christian. He wishes he had had him for the entire spring. Obviously, he can't get those 4 or 5 weeks back or whatever it is, so Christian will have to catch up. Christian, when I talked to him before the trade, the day he was traded, I talked to him in the locker room before that, and he was as confident, as optimistic and positive as he's been since I've known Christian, which is his junior year at Penn State. So he sounded good. He has the right mindset. He does believe he's retooled his throwing motion. And someone who knows Christian but is not directly related to him or Penn State told me Christian has done something very, very difficult to do, and that is retool your throwing motion. So he's going to get to show it with the Raiders, and he's going to get to see if that's enough for him to stick. And obviously the performance.
The performance is going to matter, but in the end, one of the elements of the fact that I like that Gruden decided to go and take a chance on Christian is that in the Gruden quarterback camp, he was around him and he worked him out already a couple of years ago, so there must have been something he saw that he liked to bring him there.
Well, and keep in mind, Derek Carr, who I think everyone likes as a quarterback, has missed games because of injury. You know, it's not like John Gruden goes in and says, you know, I got an Eli Manning here who never misses a game, or I have, you know, this Iron Man. I mean, Derek Carr has had at times occasion to miss games, and his backup for that reason is an important position. All of them are, but it is when you don't play behind. You know, Eli Manning's backup, for example, Steve, we've ignored for years because we could. You know, with most quarterbacks, the backup matters, and in this case, he has a chance to win what would be a very important job for him. That would be a real success story given where he's come from, Steve. I'm not saying it would be the end of the story, but it would be an important step in his journey if Christian could win that backup job. That would say an awful lot about him given the way his first 2 years went.
No question. No question. It's E.J. Manuel, it's Connor Cook and Christian. They're the ones vying for that spot. Hey, Kim, have a great one. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time as always, okay?
Until I talk to you again, perhaps in the middle or toward the end of summer. I look forward to it, Stevie.
It's same here, Kim. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.
Kimberly Jones, NFL Network. And, catching us up on Saquon, Christian Hackenberg, so much more. I did, by the way, have a text exchange with the suit.
Oh, really?
I texted him, while some of us are throwing heavy innings, others are drinking apple martinis.
That's right.
And they
100% accurate.
And they were wonderful. So I asked, are you watching Sex and the City reruns? No. I've seen them all already. And that's why he ordered the way he did.
More guys than you think 20 years ago are watching that show. Right on the other side of the glass from where I'm sitting, we had our Central Susquehanna Valley League fantasy football draft. I think it was the second year I was in it. And believe it or not, there were a few of the guys who were friends with Roger sitting across from him at the table. Oh, we got to wrap this draft up. Tonight's the season finale of Sex and the City. No joke.
Oh. That's okay. That group graduated to Lifetime movies. All right. So.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.